Good afternoon, and welcome back to another episode of Structured Insights, the podcast where we talk about things that are complicated, exciting, and new. That's not a theme song, about IT and technology. So my name is Nick. I'm from Channel Bytes. I am a guest host today. And we, of course, have back on the pod, Mr. Bill Tracy. Welcome back, Bill.
Hey, everybody. Excited to be here.
So we've got some, I mean, honestly, this is a fascinating topic for me. As we were talking before we went live, it's new, but I think it's something I'm coining stock and roll, automate or die trying.
That's I love it.
The theme. What we're going to talk about today, folks, is hyper automation and how that plays into SOC tools, what it means for technologies, and what it means for your business. So, we ready to go?
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. So I think for those people who are listening that maybe are not as smart as you are, Bill, let's talk about, let's break down what is hyper automation.
Sure. When we think about hyper automation, and I think specifically as it relates to the SOC, this is one of I'll take even a step back there. When I think about automation, that's all the trend and rage and everything across the technology stack. But the problem is automation is, it's an idea, it's a concept, and it's something we all want to execute on, but it's such a wide open playbook. When we think about our SOC operations, that's one of the key areas that we see automation bringing tremendous value to the organization. Due to the landscape and consistency and emerging threats that are hitting our clients and our businesses across the world, no team can do all of the investigation and correlation needed to even know where to start to go help with remediation. You know, the SOC teams are dealing with, you know, hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of alerts a week, a day. And by putting in the right SOC automation tools, you're able to distill a lot of that manual research down to automated processes and really focus on the vulnerabilities, the attacks, and the exploits that are most dangerous to your organization. So you know where to start and put your effort into to effectively remediate and protect yourself from those attacks.
So if I had to break it down to what, you know, an analogy, because that's, I have to simplify things for my brain. I think about like a small town bus station versus like a major international airport, right? Small town bus station, you buy your ticket, you go to the, you get marked off, you get on when the bus comes, you get on, but it works, but it's kind of clunky, right? It's a very manual process, a lot of steps, versus if you had hyper automation and you get a book a ticket online, your ID is scanned by your face, you get real-time alerts on if your plane's going to be delayed, everything's talking together, you hopefully, knock on wood, get there on time. Is that a good way to put it?
I think so. And all the way down to from the second you enter Grand Central Station or whatever, you've got signage, boards, automation, all of these systems in place to help you effectively get anywhere you need to go, because there's 25 trains and buses running it at any given time and crossing paths. And so, you know, you cannot solve that problem with enough people, unless I was going to have a you know, attendant and a chaperone for every third person coming through the turnstile. It's just not an effective way to run a train station.
So when we talk about technology though, and obviously this is specific around a SOC, but when we talk about different advanced technology, so obviously there's AI, machine learning, process automation, different platforms, like can all of that make up and be a part of hyper automation, or is it, hey, it's just one technology stack and that's it?
No, I think it's a good point. I mean, I think that, you know, automation across your technology stack, again, that's very much the end goal, the journey, the outcome that organizations are looking for to make their technology teams run more efficiently. And that's everything from data center automation, provisioning systems, machines, storage in a very effective and scalable way, deploying my cloud resources in an effective scaling way. And those automation tools have definitely been around for a long time. And I think when we talk about SOC automation in particular, it's been there's kind of been two ways to solve this problem. It was open source, build your own, go take some great tools that are off the shelf and you can build your own automation, but you're starting with a blank slate of a bunch of tools that are not necessarily enterprise user friendly and supportive and take tremendous amounts of input and work and resources from a human capital perspective to make those tools run effectively. And then you had some very, very mature platforms that can do a lot of this. When you think of, you know, ticketing, threat input, threat feeds, plus my SOC response, where then my SOC teams are just working in daily and they've got that, you know, think of the dashboard you see whenever you see cybersecurity in a TV show. It's not quite that easy, but some of those platforms make it there. The problem is that kind of technology gap definitely left a big squishy center for a lot of smaller, medium enterprises. And those were some of the folks that are now being targeted the most. When we think about where attackers are looking, they want to look for the most vulnerable organizations. You know, usually an organization with a big name brand, well-recognized, probably has a pretty significant IT security spend to try to prevent breach. So we more and more see attackers targeting that squishy middle of enterprise. And those are the folks that don't have the talent or the funds to invest either in those open source or those big platforms. And we're seeing tools emerge on the market to help those organizations build a successful SOC.
So before we get into some of the tools specifically, some comments when we've talking about hyper automation is it replaces people, right? It just takes away all the people. And so obviously people in IT, when you talk about technology that replaces people, they get a little twitchy, right? And so what's your view of, is it replacing humans or is it augmenting humans when you think about hyper automation?
It's absolutely true, right? Just like in the industrial automation, there's no more people working in the automotive plants building cars. No, I say that cheekily, but right, there's still a lot of people. Now, what that means is that skill sets need to change, what those operators are doing needs to change. And more importantly, the biggest benefit we see is it allows those people to spend more time on the most significant issues and the most valuable things to the organization. So by taking off that manual investigation workload, combing through vulnerabilities, combing through alerts, and trying to be that human correlation engine, they now are spending their time shoring up those gaps, shoring up those inconsistencies in their enterprise, and or shifting to other valuable tasks as far as quantifying and assessing risk for the organization, et cetera. So it's really trying to take a lot of that lower level of work that really there's not a lower tier of worker or level of worker to do. That person still needs to have the skills and the mindset to know, okay, I'm reading through a million vulnerabilities, I'm going through a million alerts, right? But that's just not an effective task for that person to be sitting at their desk doing all day.
Yeah, and I think one stat I saw was that 70% of security teams experience burnout due to alert fatigue. And I thought, wow, I mean, This is, to your point, this is a great technology to alleviate that, to get them out of that, you know, look at the human side of this, get them out of that burnout stage, get them focused on, just like you said, focus on something that can, that's more important, a higher level of work.
Yeah. And we still have a massive shortage of cybersecurity professionals globally. I mean, the numbers keep changing all the time. So I'm reticent to even quote the number, you know, but I've heard millions of folks millions of headcount of shortage of cybersecurity specialists. And I think that these tools help reduce that shortage of folks by automating kind of those level one tasks.
We've talked in previous episodes around structured specifically that your view of how to use playbook, cohesive playbooks, and how to think about process and automation. When we do think of tool time, not Tim the Toolman Taylor, but tool time for technology, how should we look at the different buckets of tools that support hyper automation in the market today?
Sure. So I think at kind of broad strokes, you've got some sort of logging and security event correlation tool. You have some sort of a threat feed vulnerability ingestion source. And then you've got kind of the what I would call, and I kind of put into one category, and this can be different tools, but really the ticketing and that automation playbook response element. So I'm really, I need to bring all of my events and logs and alerts into one place. I need to then bring in all of the known threat feeds, known vulnerabilities, known bad actor information, correlate those together, find out where the overlaps or gaps in my enterprise are. And then I have at its raw form, a ticketing and a playbook system that allows me to take action based on what that correlation was, because that action can be a lot of different things. My first step is to, I see an alert that there was I may have a breached endpoint in my environment. Well, first thing I need to go do is see, was that device vulnerable to that breach or exploit? Am I getting any alerts or data from that device to indicate it's been breached? Where is that device maybe talking to or trying to make connections out to the world? Are those going to known bad threat actors, countries, IPs, et cetera? And then once I determine all of that, that's the first couple steps of the playbook. What are my remediation steps? What do I do next? Who do I alert within the organization? Who am I required through governance and regulatory requirements to notify? Do I go then block that endpoint, quarantine that endpoint, disable that network connection to prevent lateral spread? And then I move into a next step of, if there was a good indicator of compromise and I think something was breached, I need to do further investigation to see if that attack moved laterally throughout my organization by, again, going back into my log sources, figuring out where that device was trying to communicate and how that potential exploit might have spread or moved around my network, and then wash, rinse, repeat, go back to kind of step one if I find additional indicators, et cetera. And these SOC automation tools can take care of a lot of those first kind of steps one through three. And as we see them develop, even going to that next step, once it's determined that I think there was breach, maybe I'm going to automatically go tell the network to shut down that port so I don't even need human intervention then. And now, again, that SOC analyst is spending his time assessing the potential risk or damage to the organization rather than running around scrambling, trying to shut down network ports and hair on fire. So that's really the end state where we're trying to get to.
It's funny, as you say, in all these steps, it's like you're using the I'm doing this. But it's those first steps of, yeah, it's in probably milliseconds. It's happening so fast. It's checking. And then now that piece of information gets to a human. Now they've got to put some intelligence experience into it to do what's next, right?
And that's where the automation piece is so important, because even if I have a team of humans sitting at the desk watching the dashboards, these things are happening in milliseconds, microseconds. They're happening quickly. And as fast as I can respond, was that 5 or 10 minutes even long enough for something damaging to happen? And the answer often is yes. And the unfortunate reality is usually is a strong word, very often those things are not picked up for hours, days, even longer in some cases. And that's where the real damage to an enterprise is done, where that lateral spread becomes a risk, or where the data loss becomes significant to where it becomes a kind of notifiable event and you end up in the news that nobody wants to be.
Before we get into, I think, a little bit more of like who are some of these players that do this, I want to go back to your comment about, you know, the first few steps and then the human intervention. What's that today? And I'm sure this will change with technology, but today, what's that last 10% that really can't be handled by automation, that has to have, you know, somebody truly a cybersecurity expert, somebody at the SOC intervening? Like, what's that 10% that they can't handle, the automation can't handle?
Yeah, I mean, I think it comes in a few different flavors. I think that there's the part of it is truly that intellectual knowledge you might have of your environment or of your network, and using that to, because even if I have AI and machine learning quantifying and assessing risk of all of these indicators that it has seen, I might still, as the senior SOC analyst, know more about my environment, and often will know more about that environment to really help add that. Really, I guess it's kind of that last maybe 10 or 20% of risk quantification. And then it's, I think that's one piece. And then I think the other piece is actually going and making those firewall rule changes, those switch rule changes, those endpoint rule changes. Again, most of these systems and tools have APIs and connections and the ability to connect to these tools to do that. But I don't think we're still quite at that point. We've talked about this in some previous podcasts around AI and automation even. Like, am I really ready to let the system make active changes to my network? What if it makes the wrong syntax a firewall policy rule and takes my network down for 4 hours? And then I've got a whole nother team of humans trying to go figure out what the heck happened. And yes, if I'm being actively breached, maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's a bad thing. I don't know, but you want to avoid that if possible. So I think we're still in just implementing all of those rules and policies and API connections to disparate tool sets that are constantly changing is difficult. It's a little scary, some combination of both. And so that's what we see a lot of the last mile. And I think also the third piece of that is then understanding the people that I need to really bring in as that TAC team, that quick response force, to respond to this if an event or a breach or an incident has kind of elevated to that point. You know, there's no substitute for running down the hallway with your hair on fire and pulling the right people together that, you know, otherwise I'm going to send out more emails and alerts and notifications, which I think we all get enough of in our daily lives.
Yeah, it's a touchy subject of, you know, giving up complete control, right? That's probably you could talk about the security ethics and just trust, right? Is it to let Skynet take over completely? And I think it's clear you have to have humans involved to some extent.
Sure.
So let's back up to, obviously there's a lot of players in this space that do the work, right? So from Corelight, Tor, Blink, Palo Alto, Splunk, etc. How do we think about, you know, obviously different technologies apply to different levels of either small business, medium, enterprise. If somebody is working with structured or working just, you know, trying to seek help, how should they look at these different types of vendors and technology?
I think there's a couple key maybe inflection points to think about that help drive like tool decisions and how you want to solve this problem. And I'll add another one to kind of the list of some of the names that you threw out there when I think about, you know, managed SOC and managed detection and response services that add a whole managed service element on top of a stack or a suite of tools. So there's really, you know, I think structured's kind of broken it down into four different ways to solve this problem. And I think that often resonates or is relevant to organizations of certain sizes, but also based on their budget and their risk profile. So you have to kind of take all those things into account. And that's part of what like we'll do when we have an engagement. When let's say it's in its rawest form, a client came to us and said, we know we are a compliant organization. We have regulatory requirements. We know we're a high value target. We have a SOC team. We have a number of tools, but we want to figure out where to go next. What we want to do is kind of come in and again, assess all of those data points, understanding where they are, where they want to be, and what they have on the floor, and then figure out based on how they want to invest in more, is it more tools and services? Is it more people? Is it some combination? That's going to help dictate the right direction. And I kind of alluded to this earlier, but a great example is using open source tools is usually very cost effective. You know, there's usually a free or a freemium model, but they're very capital or they're very operationally intensive. A lot of people, a lot of time to make those tools work. So we see this in some, a good example maybe we've seen here is around universities and research institutions. They have sensitive intellectual data, but they have a lot of really, really smart people and not always the most budget, right? So they actually have a human, they don't have a human capital problem, but sometimes they have a capital expenditure, you know, challenge. Yeah. So they have the time and the people to invest in making those tools work. As I look forward to kind of the small and medium enterprise, that's where the biggest challenge exists, as I alluded to earlier, because often a small medium enterprise has a relatively small, nimble security operations team. They may be part, they may just be part of the general IT team, or they may be part of a separate security operations team within the organization. That usually comes down to what level of regulatory compliance are they under. And so usually if you're under regulatory compliance, let's say you're a small, medium-sized, you know, credit union, financial institution, you're going to have a more mature security operations team than a manufacturing company of the same size. The challenge now becomes for that manufacturing company, are they working with the federal government? Maybe they are falling under CMMC compliance requirements. Now they're having to adhere to federal levels of regulatory compliance that they're not used to. Are they a target because they're a well-known name brand? Are they a high value target just because of reputation? Those kinds of things. Those are the folks that we really see having to pick that path of, do I invest in an outsourced managed detection response, managed SOC service? Or do I build my own, maybe using some of the tools that you mentioned, like a BlinkOps and a Torq, and or a BlinkOps and a CoreLite, because BlinkOps really helps me with the automation playbook runbook piece. And then maybe a CoreLite or a Torq is really helping me ingest all of that threat data to bring that together. So they kind of have two decision points there on, do they want to invest in people and some tools, or do they just want to outsource? And, you know, usually I could say it's, you know, it's not that one is going to be more cost effective than the other, you know, in every organization. It might be 10% difference, might be 40% difference in your overall OPEX spend at that point, but it's really dependent on what they need. And then often what we see in maybe a larger enterprise is, they've got a very mature SOC team. They've got a very a large staff of people to do it, but maybe they are looking to enhance their tool suite and standardize and simplify onto one platform-based tool. They've been running individual tools. They've pieced their SOC together over time because they've been in a regulated industry. They're a large enterprise, but they want to invest in simplifying their tool sprawl and their tool spend, I think. Every large organization that we're talking to is looking at OPEX considerations and usability and efficiency operations. And as we've seen with some of the big breaches over the last 10 years, often it wasn't a problem of tool investment or people. It was that they might have had too many tools and not enough process to effectively respond to those threats in a very timely manner. So by moving to a standardized, simplified platform, like a Palo Alto XSIAM, a Splunk platform, they can consolidate a lot of those operations under one tool to make sure all of those large distributed security operations teams are all kind of rowing in the same direction in the same tool.
What's the old saying that great technology can't solve people and process problems?
You got it. And I think that absolutely speaks back to the automation side. And I think it's important to share with people that, like cloud, automation is an end goal. It's an end state. Like any other improvement, whether it's, you know, diet, working out, or whatever, there's short-term pain for that long-term gain. I have to develop those playbooks. I might even have playbook templates, I need to make them relatable and usable in my organization. So there's a lot of upfront effort and investment to build out those playbook, build out those runbooks, build out those automations, and understand what tools and services I do want to allow my automation tools to go control or block in the event of a breach. But that front side investment pays massive long-term dividends as we think about how that organization is going to continue responding to the evolving landscape of threats out there.
To that point, obviously people come to Structure for insight, for guidance and support. How does someone, you know, that's listening to this and they want to move towards that hyper automation, but they want to do it without chaos. They won't want to do it without that. They don't want to go on a breakneck diet, so to speak. What are some of the things, I mean, you talked about the playbooks, but break it down even, I guess, even to a simpler, tangible next step. Like, what can that, you know, again, the three different sections of businesses, like, what should they, what moves can they make to at least start the process of moving towards hyper automation?
I think it's absolutely, yeah. Just call us, we'll solve all your problems. Yeah. I think that one of the first steps is that the technology / information security teams really have to be very aligned with the business objectives and what the board or the leadership teams want and expect out of the cybersecurity organization. And there's a lot of resources to do that. Cybersecurity is top of mind for every organization, non-technology people, you know, board leadership, non-technology executives. This is a very top of mind topic. So by aligning and understanding their kind of goals, objectives, and how they want to be able to respond is important. And you have good resources. Most of our clients are going to have cybersecurity insurance, and many of your cybersecurity insurance providers are willing to also help provide some additional guidance. I think back to the days of like backup and data, you know, data disaster recovery and backup planning for our clients, right? RTOs, RPOs, you know, recovery point, recovery time objective. Those are some of the conversations you have to be thinking about in terms of cybersecurity, because if just say this bluntly, if maybe the board or the business side of the leadership of the organization does not see themselves as a high profile target, a high value target, or at risk, you're going to have a really hard time getting the buy-in to invest in whatever tools, services, or people you want to consume. And so even knowing that is going to help even start to understand maybe what your next steps are as a technology team to drive these initiatives and how you need to be able to talk about it. And then that's where you start to again engage with a partner like Structured out there to help you quantify maybe some of that risk and understand the value that these tools can bring. And again, cyber insurance in particular is becoming very much a driving need, right? There's organizations that are being dropped. Their rates are going through the roof, even if they haven't had an event, just like, you know, we're seeing this with the private insurance organization. You know, people are having their home insurance dropped, even though they've never had a claim for 25 right. years. The same thing is happening in the cyber insurance world because these breaches are so massive and so costly. And you don't have to be a massive organization with billions of revenue to have a significantly costly cyber breach or event. So, you know, really starting and assessing the business's desire, lean towards it is going to be your first place to start. Because again, once we know those things, that's also going to help maybe steer in the right direction of tools or services that align with the business's perspective or perceived risk of the organization and change our approach to what tools or services we want to bring in to help.
Those are great first steps. So when we're talking about soccer roll, I think if you want to keep rolling with hyper automation, great advice. I think obviously make sure you have your business goals in place. Make sure you're picking tools that are talking to each other. Start with low risk automations. And of course, partner with the right team and as companies like Structured that actually understand how to make all this stuff work together. Does that sound about right?
Great summary, Nick. You always do a great job with that.
Well, thanks again. Obviously, lots of stuff going on with hyper automation in the SOC space. For the listening, I mean, I think it will continue to change. I'm sure we'll probably talk about this again. There's so many spokes that you can spin off of this type of technology and where humans are in the discussion around all this. So thank you again for your time and your insights. For those of you who are listening, you can find Structured Insights on YouTube, Spotify, and wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks again, Bill, and we will see you next time.
Great to see you, Nick. Thank you.